Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast, broadcasting from the oldest grace-based web presence in the universe. I'm Don Bartlett saying, you are God in the earth.
And this is Michael Lilborn Williams welcoming you to the Gospel Revolution.
And here to join us is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Mr. Williams, how are you? Fresh back from your trip to our frozen chosen in the north.
Yeah, Don, it's been a little bit since I returned. It takes a little more time. I have to say two things about my speaking there. I do better without damaging my voice now over the time. I think I totaled it up. I spoke a total of 12 hours while I was there. And
now, just for those of you joining us for the first time, we just completed our Calgary, Canada conference. What do we call that?
Spring 2020. And it was also titled Beyond Belief, the sequel. So, it was good. And I think that what we did almost 10 years ago on the subject of belief had to be done before we came to this, because this would not have been something that I think that it, myself or anybody else would have been ready for had we come to this extent of our understanding on belief without having laid that foundation on the very first series we did on belief, and the things that we've learned and shared as we've gone along in this last decade. It's really been an amazing, eye-opening experience for sure.
Mate, I had to take my hat off to Nardos Kabidi, who took one of the sessions.
Ah, yes.
Mate, I don't know about you. The best I ever did was 3 points in a poem, but he had 10 points, mate. 10 points. I thought he was never going to end with a point.
Yeah. He was happy with it.
He was pretty good, actually. And his subject matter, his content was excellent.
Everyone did. I was, of course, taking advantage of that time to retreat. I just cannot tell anybody, and I told Nardos how valuable it was for me, for he and for you. Then you took the same session with Nardos and came online and spoke to the folks, and everybody just really was so happy to see you.
Tell me if James Gustafson got over me, because I kept using him. I kept using him as a running gag, and I sure hope he didn't take it too personal.
Well, I think he did just fine. James is one of those friends and gospel revolutionaries that he's going to say exactly what comes to his brain. Pertaining to the gospel, he has no filters, which I like that.
Yeah.
I got a message from one of our folks there who told me, "Oh, Mike, I've got to ask you this, and I didn't want to bring it up because I didn't want to interrupt." And it's like, no, that's when you bring it up. You interrupt. I told him, I said, everybody at the conference needed to engage in that conversation, and I needed it. You needed it. We all needed it. And so I'm trying to respond to this now. That was some questions that, oh my gosh, it would have just added. So we've still got to get it across to people. Ask the questions, because it so spurs things on.
Well, there's an even better reason, and that is, if you're thinking what you're thinking, don't kid yourself that somebody else ain't thinking the same, only they're even more timid than you are to ask the question. But they really want to know the answer, and it's probably good for everyone to know the answer.
Yeah, exactly. So Yeah, but it was very good. And then my recovery time, of course, after coming back, if I didn't have to do the plane ride, I think that my voice and my throat would survive the conference just well. But I tell you, getting on that airplane with that recirculated air, it's like I wish I could be a boy in a bubble for just a few hours.
Well, you came back right on the cusp of the coronavirus. And to tell you the truth, there's a couple of people that concerned me. One was you, locking yourself into a cigar-shaped aluminium tube.
Full of demons.
Well, yeah, and no less, according to KCM.
Now he'll say it was a prophecy.
Oh, hell. But the other guy is Al Vitale, who I haven't heard from. He's on a cruise, and I'm cautiously optimistic.
I did not know Al was on a cruise. There's several ships.
I know.
That are stuck off the coast, and they're not coming back in.
Well, I've asked Mel Martin a couple of times about him, but we'll find out. And he'll doubtless show up in a day or two's time and give us a buzz. But the coronavirus concept is well and truly upon us, and I think it deserves a mention. I put out I don't know what you'd call it, a cautiously optimistic screed to all of our people and people in other groups as well, in which I've simply said, look, if you want to be God in the earth, you're not going to get a better opportunity to be God in the earth. There's lots of old people who are stuck at home and they're scared to go to the store. There was a story on the web the other day about a lady who gave $100 to a girl who was passing by saying, we're 80 and we're scared to go into the shop, but would you do our groceries for us? And she did. Just to give people the picture of where we're at, in Cullman, Alabama, where I live, there is no food on the shelves. In Amsterdam and Rotterdam in the Netherlands, people are buying the shelves, literally buying the shelves. I've got no idea what they're going to do with the shelf, but they're buying the shelves. There is in all Western countries, seems to be a panic buy on toilet paper. Well, now I know the toilet paper can be doubled up as a mask, but why a run? It's like people are going, they're not going to be selling any more toilet paper after this thing's over, not for a year or two. Now, okay, I understand you are going to use it up, but what I wanted to say to all of our people was, look, we can be light bearers. We can be carriers of peace in an anxious world. There is what we know for sure about this whole thing is that we know nothing for sure.
Yeah.
We don't know anything for sure, but we do know one thing: this too shall pass.
Yeah, it will be over. It definitely will be over. I mean, especially if you look back at history, and regardless of how difficult obviously we'll have reshaped our society, the world has been awakened to the possibilities now. That I think there's many things that will come out of this with the good. We will have been awakened to something that we need to be prepared, and we were not prepared for any of this. No one around the world was. And now the world knows, we're all in this together. It's amazing how that a virus comes along and proves we're all one. It's like, well, if you don't believe us that we are all one, will you believe the virus that we're all one? And I was talking to a friend yesterday, and I said, it's so weird, as drastically different as we can look, our colors, our shapes, our sizes, what once a doctor cuts through the skin, everything looks the same.
How about that?
I mean, all you got to do is it's just cut the skin, and you don't know.
You what? Haven't got a clue. The kidneys are where the kidneys are expected to be. The heart is where the heart is supposed to be. And guess what? Ain't no color barrier.
No, there is none there. And So everything has the ability to prove that we're all one. And right now, everything really is doing that very thing. It's proven that we are all one, including this virus, that's for sure.
Gospel Revolution.
Colossians chapter 1, and I think, Michael...
Where did we get to? This was before Calgary for me, so I'm brain dead as to where we were.
It's a lifetime ago, mate, for all of us. By the way, family, we were going to have Daniel on this morning, but the reason Daniel's not with us this morning is simply because I set to get the all the technology working and found I couldn't see the holes into which the cables went. So please forgive me for being remiss there. And this week I'll have all that taken care of. And next week we will have Daniel Rouse with us on the podcast.
Wonderful.
So verse 14, I think, is where we got up to. And we're talking about Jesus, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness of sins. And I think that what Paul is doing there is saying, your faith has gone out into all the world, or to use his words in Romans, and we've heard of your faith, and it's really great to hear that your faith is strong and healthy. But I want to add a few things that your faith has not done for you. And all of this was done in and by and through Jesus.
Yeah.
Verse 14, in whom we have redemption through his blood. And verse 15, who is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature. And I'll just check that word creature. I haven't checked that yet. But back in another part in Corinthians, when Paul says, if any man is in Christ, he's a new creation. Yeah. The word is species, and in fact, that verse in Corinthians reads, if even one man made it into Christ, guess what? A new species exists. That's the way it reads in the Greek. But here he says, Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature, and I'll come to the Greek of that in a minute.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I'm gonna stick Mike Williams on a hook and say, we're hearing lots these days, Mike, about, see, you can't say that God is like this or God is like that or God's like something, because even Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And here Paul is saying he's the image of the invisible God, the invisible God that said, hey, bash babies' brains out against a rock, kill all the Amalekites and kill their kids as well and go into the – and all of that kind of ugly stuff. So what do we do with verses like this, Michael?
The interesting thing to me is, of course, all of this, after we've already compared Paul, as my wont haunt is to do a little recap, we found out what he said their faith would do. He says that your faith gave you hope about being in heaven. But let me tell you what Christ did that goes far beyond what you hoped for. That's what the context of this is. He's saying, you know, yeah, it's kind of like he's patting him on the head. Yeah, we understand. Your faith tells you you're going to go to heaven, but this is actually what happened. So he gets, and one of those declarative statements is, in whom we have redemption through his blood, even the forgiveness, we've been completely set free from sin. Now, the term redemption through his blood, and then it says even, the word even is italicized, in whom we have redemption, which means to be completely freed from. We're completely freed from something through his blood, the forgiveness of sins. So we are completely, sin has been eradicated. That's basically what this verse is saying. In him, we have eradication of sin.
But some people would say, oh, but that we is only the people who believed.
They could say that, yes, and that's what Paul is addressing. Is he talking about just people who now are convinced they're going to heaven, or is this everybody? I think the following verse, really, especially when you take into consideration Paul's teaching about the first and the last Adam. Adam was the first of his creation.
Well, can I just right there? Can I interrupt you?
You sure can.
I want to read you the Greek of this next verse.
Wonderful. I was wanting to get into that.
So, who is the image of the invisible God? Who is the image of the God of the unseen, actually, is the way that the Greek reads. He's the God of the unseen. Who is the image of the God, the unseen, revealed, and the name and the word is creation, of every creation.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't say he's the firstborn of creation. It says he's the firstborn of every creation, and creation is a noun. So it's the same as Paul used in Corinthians. If even one man made it into Christ, then we know there's a new species, a new creation. Here he's saying it doesn't matter what creation you're talking about, Adamic creation, post-Adamic creation, every creation is covered in this man, Jesus.
Yes, because Adam was created out of Christ. I mean, that's what we are led to understand, was that God, that without Christ was not anything made that was made. Man was made. Christ was not made. Christ was before that which was made. So he would have been the firstborn. Now, the term firstborn, does that mean that we could narrow this down as to which creation he might be talking about? He's the firstborn. Does that mean that, because Christ was not born until Mary? I know that that's the pivotal point in Paul's teaching, is this firstborn. He teaches on this in 2 Corinthians, I believe it's 2 Corinthians or 1 Corinthians 15, about him being the firstborn from the dead. The term firstborn, Don, are we talking about an actual birth here?
Yes. Prototokos is a Greek term, proto. You will remember that I love the term that Jesus is a prototype.
Yes.
So proto is the word from which we get prototype. And tokos simply means to be born. Now, this is one of the verses that a lot of people will say, see, he wasn't God. He was born. He was a man. The Trinity is wrong, and so forth. Unitarians will use this argument, as well as monergists. But the firstborn is the firstborn.
Yeah.
And if it says the firstborn, there is no reason not to say, yes, he was the prototype. When he rose from the dead, he was born again.
Yes. I don't understand the Unitarian view. Of course, I don't understand a lot of things about what people believe and why they make such a ruckus about it. But the fact of it is that this is the very point. This is where God became a man.
In fact, it might help if we understand that tokos the prototokos, tokos actually means a seed.
Wow.
So he's the first seed, or the first thing from a seed, like as a plant or something else. He was the first seed.
Wow.
And doesn't that remind you of what Paul says in Romans about the seed?
Yeah, if you're in Christ, the only way you could be there is if you were in the seed with him. He's just the first one out of the seeds.
The first one out, yeah.
He was the first one of every creature. And regardless of what it says, I think the word every means every, right?
It's the same root as we use in, and if I be raised up, I will draw all to myself.
Yeah.
It's the same root as pantas, as pas, all.
Yeah.
All means all.
All means all. So he is the firstborn for whatever born is, whether you take this for just at the cross or also before Adam. At this point, it's absolutely irrelevant because the fact of it is, he is the firstborn of all of creation. He is the firstborn. there's no creation that's outside of him being the firstborn of it. So they belong to him. He's the first. That's all I've got on that. I think that he is the image of the invisible God. So yes, that which was invisible now has become visible. And not only is it was it made visible through Christ, it's now visible through each of us.
If the invisible has now become visible, what's it look like?
Well, look in the mirror. I mean, what else do we have to look at? That is what is visible. That is what this entire transformation is talking about. That is how God became a man. Emmanuel, God with us. I think the scriptures back this up all the way through. And that's what we really should be looking for, is the God in each and every one of us. If I tell you, one of the most beautiful practices I ever started doing, people ask me, so now what should we do? Well, here's what you do. You go around looking for God in everybody. That's the only thing I can tell you that I do. I go around looking for God in everybody. And it's a really weird thing. Once you start looking, you see it. Because if you're looking for God in everyone, you're most likely treating them more like God than you did before. So you start treating people differently, and just in any respectful way. It's amazing what just treating people with respect can bring back out of them. It is, you'll find it. Now you treat people with disrespect, you're going to find a whole different nature is there also. But if you want to find God in every person, you can find it. You can find God in every person.
The next verse goes, for by him.
Well, this really puts the icing on that cake as to whether or not we're talking about at the cross or before creation.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. For by him were all things created.
Very interesting.
And what he's saying in the previous verse is, it doesn't matter what creation you want to talk about. All creations,
yep.
All creations involved him.
This is really wonderful.
For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible, invisible, whether they be, and the word in Greek is thrones, exactly the same as it is in English, thronos. Thrones, or lordships, or principalities. Well, it says here principalities, but again, masterdoms, if you like, or powers, exousia. All things were created by him. It doesn't matter what is out there. It doesn't matter how big it looks. It doesn't matter how much power it appears to have. It was created by him.
Yeah, all power was created by him and is before all of those. So, you know, don't let your head get too big for you whenever you're in a position of power. There is somebody who created the power that you wield. That's for sure. They were all created by him and for him. That's a really powerful statement. It's probably way more than we're going to be able to get out of it today as to the implications of that.
And he is before all things. Where are we? Verse 17, are we? And by him all things exist. Now,
exist or consist?
I beg your pardon. I do beg your pardon. Consist. In fact, it's held together, mm-hmm. would be the way the Greek says it, which is absolutely consistent.
Yeah.
Now, kai autos esen pro. Now, the word before all things is the word Greek prefix pro. It's a freestanding preposition here. It's used as a word in its own right. It's not used as a propanton, before all things. As a prefix, it's used as a preposition. So, and he is, now, pro can mean ahead of in either time, place, or significance. So, he is in front of everything. Mm. And the all in him is held together.
Yeah. Paul is being very thorough here, isn't he?
Oh, he's not leaving a door open.
No, for sure. What we're getting out of this is no matter where you think things started, it actually started before that. No matter what you think holds things together, there's something else that's holding it together. No matter how high you think you are, there's something higher than that. You know, no matter where you think the end of the line is, there's one beyond the end of the line. No matter how low you think it might go, there's one that comes in even lower than that. This is such an all-inclusive description by Paul as to the consistency of Christ. And he's using every measurement that you can possibly think of here. He's look at all these principalities and powers and dominions. Before anything was born, he was born. And once it was all done, it was all done for him, it was all done by him, it's all done in him. He's the head of the body. He's, you know, just as sure as you think that your biceps look nice, there's something above that. So, and in control of everything.
Well, he says exactly that. No matter how good your biceps look, there's something above that. It'll be a head. And he is the head of the body, he says here. Yep. The church, or the ecclesia, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead. Now, if we don't know what firstborn means, now it tells us what firstborn means. He is the prototokos, the prototype, the very first example, the showcased example of seed. He is a pro in front of, tokos, seed. He is a seed in front of the rest of us. He's the firstborn of all creation. He's the firstborn from the dead.
Okay, Paul, come on, dude.
So that in all things, in case you didn't get it, he might have the
preeminence
before everything else-ness. Yeah.
Now, it's really interesting because you brought out something in the Greek we didn't know Paul was going to go into. He said that he's the firstborn of every creation. So basically, Paul teaches there's two creations, the first and the last creation. And then we wondered before reading on, silly us, as to whether or not that was talking about which creation. Well, Paul says, well, first off, he is the firstborn of the creation before Adam. And now he's the firstborn of the creation from the dead.
That's well and truly after Adam.
So, yeah, so now he has, Paul not only introduced to us, and without knowing the Greek here, we would have missed this, but Paul introduced to us, now the term every creation, if we were thinking people, would have told us that that's more than one creation, right? So it's obviously there. Then, just in case you don't know which creations that Paul is talking about, he gives you both of them. He says he's before this one and the last one also.
Yes. Now, the word things is not in the original Greek, and it's added in because it's reasonable enough to add it in. But instead of things, you could say creations. You know. So he is the head of the body, the church, which is a beginning, the prototype from the dead, that in all creations he might have the preeminence.
Yeah.
That word things could be replaced by creation, seeing that creations is what the context is talking about.
That's the things that he's talking about, two things. And even without it, I mean, you have only one subject left, and it's creations. So, and he has the preeminence in both creations. That's really very, very powerful.
Isn't it?
Now, I'll guarantee you, you've never heard this before from any Bible teacher. I don't care what Danny Miniskanen says. I know you've never heard this before.
Now, hold on. We need to do the jingle. Send your money to us if you'd like to know the secret we're about to share with you.
Man, this is really, really good. Honestly, all we're doing is reading. Now, the Greek is helping us stay in context. The Greek does not create context. The Greek can help you stay in context. And that's what we're doing. We're relying on the Greek here to expose the context. Now, let me tell you, see, I used to study the Greek. Let me give you a good Bible study lesson right here. I did this many, many years ago. Oh my gosh, decades, many, many decades ago, I have to say now. And on how to study the Bible, people were amazed at the things that I could find as I was going through. I told them, I said, now, and this has been with me forever, it seems like. And I told them, I said, you know, I said, one thing that is, I've got my Strong's Exhaustive Concordance. I showed them how to use it. And, this is when it was only available in the big, big, big book, the exhaustive version. And I would show them that the Greek that you can, how that you can look at the Greek and it helps with context and also can give you understanding of a word that really doesn't mean exactly the way it got translated. But see, what we did in the Word of Faith movement is use the Greek, get the definition, and then apply that definition to the context. We would change the context by the Greek definition. And then we would find every place it was used and change the context of every place that word was used.
Oh, boy.
And say, see, it's through the whole Bible. It's everywhere. It's got to be right. Well, we were really mishandling this use of the Greek because you cannot determine context by definition of the word. You still have to read in context. Let it give you context. But if you ever allow the Greek word to imply context, you're going to come up with whole new doctrines altogether. It's just inevitable. So there's a little Bible study, a Bible study lesson.
There we go. I just want to check something here. All right, and then we move on to verse, where are we? Come here.
19.
And then we move on to verse 19. For it pleased the, or so that, if you like, in him, Christ, so that in Christ, everything that looks good, everything the filling of, or the pleroma, set down roots.
Uh-huh.
For it pleased the Father that in Christ, it says more than it says in English, that in Christ not only should the pleroma, which the Gnostics early on said, well, that's the universal spirit. That is that other, the otherness that exists out there. We know it's bigger than us. We know that something created this world. We know that there is a God out there. We can't sort of tell you what the length and breadth and depth and height of this God is. We just know it's bigger than us, and we're going to call it the fullness of everything. So it pleased the Father that in him should not only the fullness of pleroma dwell, but also all the goodies, all the good things. And I don't know why that word has been left out of English. The delights, the desserts, the good stuff. It should all be found in Christ. Heck.
That's really amazing. Well, Paul really is. I mean, he has hit this nail until it has been driven into the board, and now he's countersinking the nail. So,
yeah, he's got the nail punch on the head of the nail now, and he's sinking really it straight into the board.
And he says, for it pleased the Father that in him should all of this fullness, the completeness, all of the joy, all of the goodies, as you say, everything is in him. And my goodness, what a Paul is being very direct. Now, remember what he's comparing this to. He's comparing this to what they got out of their faith. They didn't get this out of their faith. This is knowledge. This is knowledge.
That's good.
And you know, for all of my lifetime, I've known Christianity. I mean, just think about it. When you go out, and I was of those groups that went out and actually did witnessing. We didn't sit around and talk about it. It was our job, 8 hours a day. I mean, burning feet and knocking on doors and walking on hot pavement and hot sand. And I mean, this was really something that was, it was our job. But we only wanted one thing. We weren't really interested in recruiting them to come to our meetings or our group, but we wanted to get them into heaven. So all they had to do is express enough faith to say that little itty bitty teeny weeny prayer with us, and then we got a feather in our cap that we got one more in because a wise man winneth souls. And can't even remember exactly what that one says, but anyway, it says wise he that winneth souls is wise. Yeah, and I don't even know what the context of it is, but that was what we were doing. We called it soul winning, and it comes from a Bible verse. And like I said, now I don't even have any clue as to what that means. Now I'm interested in finding out, but we're not going to today.
Deconstructing religion and barbecuing the sacred cows of Christianity before your very eyes. You are listening to
Gospel Revolution.
That's what we did. If they said the prayer, you know what we told them? We told them, now guess what? When you die, you will go to heaven. So Paul's addressing a very real thing that started and is around to this very day. Use your faith, say the prayer, go to heaven. Now, that's all your faith is going to get you at very best. Is that? And he didn't even say an assurance of heaven. He said a hope. At least you know it's possible, right? Can you see that this is far beyond the hope of anything? He is everything. He's in all things. He's of all things. He's out of all things. He's above all things. He's east of all things. He's west of all things. He's north of all things. And he's south of all things. And then all the things in between are held together by him. Or you can settle for your faith. Which one do you want? What's our next verse here, Don?
I was just letting a pregnant pause take place there because that is, well, I needed it. I don't know if our listeners needed it. And having made peace, now I want you to note that this is past tense. And having made peace, now what did the angels say at the birth of Christ? And on earth, peace. And looking back, Paul says, and having made peace through the blood of his cross, by him to reconcile all things to himself, by him, whether they be things in earth or in heaven.
Yeah.
Interesting that he should include heaven. I wonder what needed reconciling in heaven.
Well, I remember doing some teaching on this. And, you know, we know that when Jesus rose from the dead, he took his blood into heaven itself, according to the verses, and used his blood to cleanse the instruments in heaven. The only thing we ever drew from that, whether or not it's true or not, I don't have a clue anymore. But the thing that we drew from that was that the instruments were used by Lucifer and his angels in worship. Instruments of worship is what we translated that to. It's interesting that, you know, they had the utensils and everything that were in the temple. Now, we're told that everything that was in the temple was simply a type and shadow of what was in heaven. So if the earthly had utensils, then whatever they were, then the heavenly had utensils, or the earthly would not have had it because it was complete replica of that which was in heaven in some other world understanding. So we do know that the blood of Christ did cleanse heaven. That's why Jesus is the Lord of heaven and earth, is because Jesus cleansed both heaven and earth.
Well, let's just stay on that thought for a bit. What we know is that by him, all things hold together. By him, all things were created. And in this verse, it says, by him, all things were reconciled. Now, that means all things were reconciled. Or if we want to take this even more literal, we can say, well, all creations were reconciled. All was reconciled. Now, that means that you were reconciled. That means your bad old self was reconciled. That means your sin was reconciled. That means that your good was reconciled. It was the tree of good and evil. It means that whatever you want to call it was reconciled. Your self-righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you could have ever done or produced, or even there was a shadow of it.
Yes.
In either creation was reconciled.
Yeah.
That's huge, man.
It is huge. Don, could you tell us the difference between the word redemption and the word reconciled?
Yeah.
Because he's brought both of those up. We have redemption and we have reconciliation. So, so the word reconcile shows up in verse 20 and the word redemption shows up in verse 14.
This is part of a discussion I have a lot of times with folks, and it's very interesting. I'm going to not answer it directly, but I'm going to answer it a little. Let me just be circumlocutive if I can. There are two words which Christianity has deliberately misled us in: redemption and salvation.
Mm-hmm.
It was all done via reconciliation. So the difference between these three words is crucial. Apokalexai is the word for to reconcile, and simply means to bring together. It simply means to bring together. And just as peace is a cessation of againstness, that's the nearest way I can explain the word reconcile. It's a cessation of againstness. Now, redemption means to go to the market and buy some. You want to buy a pound of pork at the market? Good. That is redeem. If you use the modern term, redeem, re means to do it again. You go to a pawn shop and you deem something to be worth something. When you go back, you want to buy it back. You both redeem it. Now you deem it at a higher price and you've got to pay the pawn shop owner extra money. So you redeem it. But it's still the concept of buying something at an open market. And the word salvation simply means a step-by-step progression of the effect of redemption, which was the step-by-step result of reconciliation. And the step-by-step result of reconciliation simply meant it was done of love aforethought.
Yeah. Well, how much more inclusive could Paul get? I mean, every time we read a line or go back and check something, we find out he was a little more thorough than what we thought.
Well, I don't know, mate. I think he was always thorough, but we just tended to see. We got used to it. Like you don't even think about oxygen; you just use it.
Yeah.
And I think we glossed over it, probably.
Well, we did. I mean, there was just too much. I mean, it's like there's a whole pie here, and we'd run by and take a bite and keep going.
The bite which most suited us at the time, yeah.
Exactly, but it's all here. It's not as though that this was recently put in here. I mean, it's been here for a while. But like you said, there's so much to unpack, as they say now. There's so much that this is full of. And, you know, when he goes through all of this, thrones and dominions and principalities and powers, especially principalities and powers, it's really talking about all ranks and all jurisdiction. You know, it does. That's doesn't make any difference what your rank is or what your jurisdiction is. He's above all that. He's beyond your jurisdiction, and he's higher than your rank. I just love that. I have jurisdiction. Well, Christ has jurisdiction way beyond your jurisdiction. I have rank. Well, there's somebody that's pulling rank on you here. they're higher than no matter what rank you can come up with. It makes no difference.
Verse 20, and you that were sometime alienated and enemies in mind by wicked works, yet now has he reconciled. The word your is not in the original.
Let me hover over verse 20 just a little bit more. This is the gospel of peace that he's talking about. He has reconciled againstness. The war is over. It doesn't make any difference, as Don was mentioning, what you find in the Old Testament, whether you think that actually happened or it was people's perception of what had happened. The fact of it is, it does not exist now. That is for sure. This is a declaration of peace. This is a cessation of hostility. And this is one thing that Paul is pointing out. If it's your faith, here's one thing you're going to miss. If it is your faith, you are going to miss this fact that God has declared peace with the whole human race. Your faith will never give you peace with God. Christ gave the whole world peace with God. And again, you can settle for your hope of how things are going to be in heaven, but let me tell you how they are right here in the nitty-gritty here and now. And that is, there's absolute peace between God and man.
Well, we humans would tend to say, now, if we colonized, well, let's have a look at what happened in the USA. Using the doctrine of discovery, the English settled America and parts of Canada. And the people who fought them, they just wiped them out. They were more inclined to wipe them out than they were to reconcile with them. Because that's a human way of doing things. Now, God, on the other hand, looked at this creation of his, which had gone counter to what was in their best interests, and certainly counter to what was in his best interests, and he did not say, oh, well, to hell with you, I'm going to kill you all. Not the way Christianity says. He said, yeah. I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to gather you up in us.
Yeah.
What a difference, mate.
Yeah.
What a huge difference.
And you're all going to die in me. And see, the law required death. All of creation had to die under the penalty of the law. Look at how this beautiful plan worked out. I mean, it is so intricate. It's even more intricate than Paul is describing here. But the entire human race under the law had to die. Jesus also brought up that that's the only way a grain of seed, and as we keep hounding on this, but it's such a simple and profound concept that you can't get in the seed after the seed dies. You must be in the seed before the seed dies to come out of the seed. Duh. Goodness gracious, you don't even have to have a degree to figure that out.
And that seed, according to Paul in Romans, as a result of, that was promised to Abraham, that seed was Jesus Christ. And what you're saying is you and I were in that seed.
Yes, we were in that seed, no doubt. And as required by law. See, even the law was fulfilled in that. In that the ultimate consequence of breaking any law is death. That's the only real conclusion to the law. The law is not fulfilled until the death takes place. Then the law no longer has power over the dead person, right? So the law has to end in death. And when Jesus died, the entire human race died. This is the teaching that Paul has done in so many places. His testimony in Philippians 3 is very profound, which we went into in Canada, which I hope that you guys have a chance to listen to.
But if you send us money, we'll make sure you get. Hey, by the way, young Jeff, he must be on the phone and getting busy now, I reckon.
Yes, I just spoke with Jeff, and he had a phone breakdown. I was beginning to be concerned about Jeff because I went 2 days without being able to contact him or get a return call from him, which is totally unlike Jeff.
Well, we're talking about the Pledge Drive family, but we'll come back to that because I've just successfully rerouted Mike Williams. That's not an easy task. Well, actually, for me, anything's easy like that. And you, that were sometimes alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now has he reconciled. Now, the next verse, I think, kind of pretty much ties this up. This wasn't written with punctuation, so there is no full stop at the end of the previous sentence.
Yeah.
You has he reconciled in the body of his flesh or in the body of his seed through death. There was no other way. This is what Mike's been saying. There was no other way. It had to be done through death. The seed had to die. The seed had to go into the ground in order to be rebirthed. For rebirth to happen, we had to be in the body of his flesh through death, to present you holy and unblameable and unreprovable in God's sight. Now, I want you to just see something here. You don't present you holy.
Yeah.
He presents you holy.
Yeah, it's not your faith that did this. Your faith did not get you into the seed. Duh!
You know, you and I were told that we were born corrupt. We were born in sin. This verse is here to tell you that you were born holy.
Yes.
Think of that part of you which you're a little bit embarrassed about. I can think of a few things I did in my life which I am ever, ever so embarrassed about. And yet I can't be blamed for them because I'm unblameable. Now, I can be held responsible by the powers that be here on the planet, but in front of God, I was in his flesh when he died. And unreprovable. Just in case you think that blame, because you know how shameful that makes you feel. When someone can blame you to your face, how embarrassing can that be? That can be pretty embarrassing if it's done in public.
Mm-hmm. Which it is done many times.
Oh. So in the body of his flesh is how all of this happened. In the body of his flesh through death.
Yeah.
To present you holy and unblameable and unreprovable. Not even a little reproof, not even a little bit. Well, you could have done that better, don't you know? No. Not only, now you and I look back on our lives, if we got a couple of years behind us and we say, you know, I could have done that better. No, God doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this is one of the places where you can go back and pull all of this, backfill this, where he's saying thrones and dominions and principalities and powers, or let me put it in my reduced simmered version, that's all rank and all jurisdiction. Now, you might find somebody of rank and somebody of jurisdiction that will definitely reprove you and blame you. You can be blamed. You can be reproved by most any rank or any jurisdiction that is higher than you.
Well, in some cases, depending on how much self-righteousness is invoked, yeah. Even people who are lesser than you in earthly terms.
Very true, yes. But it doesn't make any difference what rank or jurisdiction. Christ, above all rank and above all jurisdiction, presents you unblameable and unreprovable. So regardless of who does it to you, there is, I remember all these country preachers saying, there's a higher power. You know?
How come all the old preachers you knew come from the Appalachians?
Because that's where I came from. That's for sure. Well, Donald, this has been absolutely wonderful cruise through this part of Colossians.
Well, look, can I just go through the last couple of verses again?
Yes, you may.
And you that were sometime, or at one time, alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now hath he reconciled. Have you ever gone to bed and you can't get to sleep, and you think of woulda, shoulda, coulda, the ways that you could have done things better?
Yeah.
And you say, darn, I could have done that so much better. I should have done that. If only I'd... In the next verse he says, nah, unblameable.
Yeah.
Unreprovable.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go to bed and let your brain alienate you.
Yeah.
Not from God or yourself, and it can't. It can make you think you're alienated from God. It can make you think that you could have done things better. Listen, I'm telling you, this is a sandbox. Could you have done things better in earthly terms? Well, probably. Could you have done it better in godly terms? Mate, are you kidding me?
Mm.
Are you talking about the same God that I'm talking about? Are you talking about the God who created good works for you to work and walk in them before the foundation of the world? And what were the good works? To do better than you did? No, the good works were to understand that you are in the seed, unblameable, holy, and unreprovable. Holy dooly.
As unblameable and as unreprovable as the first born from the seed, who is the seed itself too. He's not just the firstborn from the seed. He's the seed of which the firstborn derived itself.
Chips off the old block. Chips off the old block.
No doubt. I'm done.
I was just thinking the same thing. That's a wrap. I don't care how much we've done. That's a wrap. That is so good.
When you're feeling down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. If you would like to know anything about the Gospel or the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And bother the boss and speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from right here in the very heart of the Gospel.
Oh, I thought you said in.
Hey, listen, mate. Tell us a bit more about the pledge drive, if you can.
Write your check to Gospel Revolution. Check it careful and go rip it up. Make a new one out for two times that much. Now reward yourself for shaping up. This is how you know you made a difference. As the gospel's leaking out all around the world, Gospel Revolution's going higher. As millions more see freedom's flag unfurled.
Jeff Robertson is doing the pledge drive for the Gospel Revolution and Mike Williams Ministries this month. So Jeff is very happy about that. I'm happy about that. He is making some reconnections, which I think are probably long overdue. He's been so very busy making a living at his chosen profession he's fallen out of contact with some folks, and they have with him also, out of due respect that he's got to work. But now he gets to walk the old hallways of the Gospel Revolution and make all of these contacts, which I remember my first pledge drive, which was an absolute joy to get to talk to everybody. So I'm sure that this will be a very good pledge drive, and we really appreciate what everybody is doing.
GospelRevolution.com. Yeah, baby.
We sure hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week. Only, well,
lots better.
What's your name, please?
My name is Chris Clifford, and I come from Sweden.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Whoa.
Hi, everybody.
And I'm going to guess you're a singer?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Correctly. I grew up in a small village in Sweden.
Yeah.
With like top 15 people in it. And almost every one of them were my family. It's nice. I started to sing when I was in fifth grade or
yeah.
something. Yeah.
And who was your inspiration as an artist?
You know, I began with a lot of rock music when yeah. I was younger. So I listened to a lot of Kiss.
Yeah.
And yeah.
All right. Well, good luck. We're all rooting for you.
Thanks so much.
It's easy if you try.